for Sincerely Jennifer with me, Jennifer Wan.
We have a new theme song. Hooray. I've been meaning to change it for ages. And then I was doing the theme for the radio show. And I had something, but I was like, this doesn't match the vibe I'm going for. So I decided to use it instead. Because it did kind of match. And then I made something else for the radio show. But anyway, wow, look at us, back together again. We did it, kids. So let's get going. We've got a new theme song and a new episode. Without you, I could have wings and see the world, standing atop the Eiffel Tower before I find my way to the waves, waiting for breathtaking. But without you, it would just be places, faceless things that just happen to pass me by. I thought about you tonight, as I stared out my window at more of the world, and I felt empty. Except for the small part of my heart that still has your name written on it, which beat faster and with more urgency as your face appeared in my dejected reflection, your eyes reaching mine as I reached for your hands. It was just my imagination, but your name is still there. All seven letters. I wrote that at the park the other day. I go up there sometimes at night when it's a bit quieter. I just kind of walk around and think about things and try and avoid people for obvious reasons. And I was just feeling really, isolated, I guess. And I was listening to the infamous Sad Girl playlist, and I just started thinking about, you know, human interaction, I think. I'm not generally a super social person. And additionally to that, I'm not a very physically social person. I don't even know if that's a thing. I mean, like, I'm not really one for, like, hugs and shit with people, even people I know very well. It was, like, a very short, select and specific list of people that I am open to those things with, and it's hard to adapt to that not being available, and it feels kind of like part of me is missing. And I know that there are people who have far bigger problems. I get that. I know that. But I feel how I feel. And I welcome them starting a podcast where they read poetry about their losses too. I'll have them on as a guest. That'd be great. But I felt that night just so alone, but not in a blissful way. It's like, this almost desperation to have someone close and feel protected and safe. But I knew it couldn't happen, and it hurt so much, and it was like it stripped away everything else from me, and all I had was this empty, lonely feeling. And so then I stripped away that feeling and I built something from it. I slept 4 hours, so maybe I'm in a sleep-deprived psychosis. But I waited, inviting sunlight into my empty bed, held by the morning, holding it together long enough to fall apart as the moon falls away. My sleep pattern has got worse, if you can believe it. Despite the fact that I am no longer having to commute anywhere because I'm doing everything at home. And so, theoretically, I should have extra sleep because I don't have to get up super early in the mornings anymore. I am struggling to get to sleep at night, and then I'm tired all day, and then I can't sleep at night, and I'm still waking up super early pretty much every morning now, even weekends, which sucks. I'm waking up at like 6, sometimes even 5, 4 in the morning. You know, I can only get to sleep around kind of 12, 1 in the morning. It just never fucking ends. Sometimes I think kind of the way I've been feeling lately, because I've been feeling very kind of not good, I feel like part of that is coming from the fact that I'm really tired. I really do believe that, because I know myself, and I know I'm a miserable fucking bitch when I don't get enough sleep, and I haven't had enough sleep in a while, you know? But there's nothing I can do about that. I can't force myself to sleep. I would love to, but it doesn't work. And so I'm just in this cycle of involuntarily staying up late, waking up super early, feeling terrible all day, and then it begins again. And I feel like it affects my mood, it affects the way I interact with people, because obviously when you're not feeling your best, sometimes things go a bit crazy, you know? And I don't know how to deal with it, and I don't know how to regulate this. You know, it was bad before, but it was manageable, and now I don't know. I think it's the fact I have nowhere to go during the day. And I have this kind of in and out thing, you know, the world feels like it's closing in, and then it's out again, and it's in, it's out again. I feel very disconnected from everybody. I know everybody else is probably going through the exact same thing. I don't think I'm the only person. And I don't know when it's gonna end. I just hope that it's soon. And I think to myself, well, then we can get back to normal, but I don't really know what normal would look like. But we'll see. What the actual fuck is going on with this whole politics business?
Everyone really needs to stand up and say that, okay, no, this is not politics in the normal British way. This is something darker and bleaker, and it's got to stop.
Peace is possible and must be achieved.
We want Scotland to remain inside the EU, and we want the UK to remain inside the EU.
Labour is weak and divided.
So, Michael Gove has a daughter called Beatrice. I don't know why he called her Beatrice, frankly. I think that's quite mean in this day and age, but whatever. Nevertheless, he has a daughter. She's 17, I think. Her name is Beatrice Gove. Now, she has been receiving backlash for many, many things recently. Number one, she was able to get tested for coronavirus. It was announced Michael Gove was self-isolating for a bit because someone in his family had symptoms of coronavirus. And then his daughter was able to get a test, and a lot of people were like, what the fuck? I can't get a test. Why can she get a test? Who even is she? And people were mad. So the good news is she doesn't have coronavirus, and that's great. Congratulations, Beatrice. Great job on not getting coronavirus. Anyway, so that was a whole thing. People were mad because she got a test and they didn't. And then additionally, she went a little bit viral on TikTok. She had a TikTok account, which she is now set to private, where she was posting videos about her life under lockdown. And I'm going to be real with you. In my experience, I feel like it was very much, you know, posh girl posting some stuff that most people would see as slightly cringe and embarrassing. Because she's, you know, she's kind of sheltered. She maybe wants her parents' attention. She does something a bit dumb. But then she, you know, the world remembers who her dad is and spreads it round, and it becomes a bigger thing than she meant it to. You know, I of course, I went to a London university, and I did a degree in a humanities subject. So at my, you know, in my time at university, I met plenty of posh girls that did that kind of thing all the time. You know, they weren't getting enough attention from their parents, so they would do something reckless to try and get them back focused on them. You know, of course, but you know, back then it was, you know, you would post it on Facebook, not TikTok, or like Instagram or something. But you know, they would go out and, you know, get a tattoo or lip fillers or start going out with a black guy on purpose to try and antagonize their parents. And it would be like, girl, just go to a counselor or some shit. Like, why are you doing this? But I mean, that to me is what this looks like. But obviously, because her dad is in the fucking cabinet and everything, it went viral. Newspapers were reporting on it. Journalists were, you know, following the account, getting screenshots and everything. And so she's made her account private. And she's, you know, she's got more backlash from this whole thing because, well, a lot of people saw the videos and the screenshots, and you know, they kind of saw it as her being a bit kind of entitled because, you know, she was complaining about, you know, no one in my family is talking to me because of coronavirus. I miss smoking weed and shit like that, and obviously that's illegal and she shouldn't really be doing that, and yet she is. And you know, her dad also, during the leadership campaign kerfuffle, openly admitted to taking cocaine and shit. So people are a bit like, what is it with the Goves and taking all the drugs and telling us we can't take the drugs, but they're taking the drugs and all this kind of stuff. So yeah, this week people are mad as hell at Michael Gove's kid. Me personally, I just, you know, like I said, I think, you know, maybe she's bored at home. She maybe wants a bit of attention. She's only 17. So, you know, I know people will say, you know, you can't treat her like a baby. 17 is grown enough to make their own decisions. And I get that 100%. I'm not saying that what she is doing and has done is not dumb as fuck, because it is. And I think maybe she could act with a bit more humility in public on social media. But it is what it is, you know. Getting mad at her is not going to change the laws surrounding drugs, or, you know, it's not going to suddenly rebalance the economy or anything like that. Me getting mad at posh girls on the internet isn't going to really change anything about my life. I mean, I'm still going to laugh at them because I think it's funny, but I'm not going to seriously waste loads of my time and energy letting this girl live rent-free in my head when her dad could probably buy her, like, literally me. Like, he could probably buy me as, like, you know what I mean? It is what it is. Posh girl's gonna do posh girl things. I'm gonna laugh at them. But they're gonna still think they're really cool. I don't know. It is what it is. So Matt Hancock suddenly remembered he's also the Secretary of State for Social Care this week. And he announced some big, exciting things. Firstly, he's decided that people who are in social care, so people who live in care homes, people who live in supported accommodation and things like that, will now be tested if they're coming home from hospital and going back to a care home or somewhere like that. They'll be tested for coronavirus before they're sent back home, and then they'll be isolated until a result is given as to whether they're positive or negative. And so, obviously, people have one big question on this. Why is this just happening now? Why has this not been happening before? What the fuck? I feel that's a valid question. Obviously, care homes particularly are full of one of the most at-risk groups of this virus. You know? So you would have thought that testing for people going back to care homes would have been a priority before now, but apparently it was not. So thanks, Matt, for this very late intervention. That's fantastic. Additionally, he announced something very special for people that work in social care, because, you know, they've very much felt forgotten in this whole crisis. There are huge problems with people who work in social care getting protective equipment, and just general life, because, you know, they're finding it difficult in terms of commuting, getting the shopping they need and things like that. And obviously they're having to keep working because they're key workers in horrific circumstances for very low pay. So it's all a bit shit for care workers, really. But don't worry, because Matt Hancock has come to the rescue with... I would put in a drum roll here, but I don't have any drums. So I'll do it on my computer. How about that? Okay. A carer's badge! Wow! Love that for them. I'm sure that totally makes up for a lack of protective equipment and fair wages. So... this carer's badge, and he announced this during the daily briefing, and he seems so fucking pleased with himself. It was embarrassing. Jesus. Okay, firstly, this is an old idea that had already been launched, but nobody really paid much attention to it at the time. It's basically a little badge that they can wear that says carer on it, I think. And it entitles them to, you know, certain discounts and things like that. In the same way that NHS workers get certain discounts and, you know, things to make their life a bit easier because they're doing a really hard job. It's essentially the same thing for carers. However, Matt Hancock announced this as if it was this big, amazing thing that he was doing for one of the most underrated, underpaid, disregarded sectors in the entirety of the UK. And this was supposed to cheer them up, a badge. Additionally, the badge isn't free. They have to pay for it. I think from what I've read, it's about $8.99. Most carers are earning minimum wage. So, you know, do they really want to throw away over an hour's wage on a fucking badge? And additionally, you can't fucking order one at the moment. Because of the coronavirus and excessive demand, they're not shipping any new ones out. So yes, he's announced it and it's great. And oh, look, you can get a fucking badge like you're on Blue Peter. But you can't get one now because they're not available at the moment. I honestly thought we couldn't get a worse health secretary than Jeremy Cunt, like I'm a BBC newsreader. But here we are. Matt Hancock smashes it out of the park. My God. A badge. I mean, yes, if they can get hold of one of these mythical badges, maybe the discounts would be useful and helpful for them, and that's great. But I'm pretty sure that they would appreciate a safer working environment, protective equipment, and better wages more than, you know, a badge and some discounts. And to be honest, are the discounts even going to be usable at the moment? Because pretty much everywhere is closed. So... the thing is, the government have been saying that they're going to help people in social care, they're going to help care workers, they're going to help the entire sector. They've been saying this for years and then they never do. So a badge just seems like a bit of a slap in the face to one of the most undervalued sectors, but one of the most essential sectors. It's sad times. Labour are also continuing their great tradition of being a fucking mess at all times. So great job, guys. I don't know, maybe it was naive of us all to think that, you know, a new leader, fresh coat of paint, might change some things, but there we are. So, fucking hell. Right, so what happened was this. A report was compiled under Jeremy Corbyn's administration that looked into why the complaints process was so shit and why it was taking so long and why it was so difficult to deal with problems like anti-Semitism and the various other complaints and issues that have happened in the Labour Party. That report was supposed to, from what I've read, be submitted to the EHRC investigation that's going on into the Labour Party to see if the Labour Party is institutionally racist, essentially. But the party's lawyers said, no, we're not sending this. And so somebody leaked it. Leaking is a thing that happens, you know. If you are curious about leaking, it's a lovely little rabbit hole to go down. Just, you know, Google it and just sit and find out how it all happens. It's amazing. But it's not a new thing. But this leak was a problem for quite a few reasons. The first and I would say most urgent reason is because the leaked report was unredacted. So it contained the details of people who had made complaints to the Labour Party. People who had complained about racism, you know, and other issues that they had faced. And the people who complained, this included minors, as in children, people who were underage. And this report is now all over the internet with these people's details in it, unredacted. There are now reports that this document has got into the hands of the far right. There are a lot of people who were named in the report for making complaints who are now scared because their details are out there. They're vulnerable. And let's not forget, this includes children. But a lot of people are not, they're not talking about that. They're not too bothered about the fact that children had their details leaked. And don't get me wrong, there are other things in the report that are quite obviously worth talking about. There is some very hard to read parts, especially in regards to bullying faced by MPs in the party and members of the party. And there's a lot of things in there that exposes quite a toxic environment in the party. But a lot of people on all sides of the Labour Party, because it is just a carousel of hell at this point, are cherry picking things that they've seen in the report or their own opinions or whatever. And they're just talking about that. And a lot of people are not talking about the fact that vulnerable people have had their details leaked. And it's like, Jesus. And additionally, they pick now to do this, to leak this report. The world is going through an actual fucking crisis at this point. Whether we want them to be the head of our opposition or not, the Labour Party is. And so really, the Labour Party should be focusing on holding the government to account, but they're having to put out fires because somebody leaked this report, unredacted, and it has just become a shitstorm. People who were named in the report for making complaints and have had their details leaked are getting together to take legal action against the people that leaked the report. I mean, don't get me wrong, I appreciate some drama every now and again. But we have far bigger things to worry about. People were put in danger by this leak, so it's not fun, awesome drama. It is people have been endangered, this is fucked up. So it's not really even drama, it's just a thing that has happened. And yes, it's dramatic, but it's also really fucked. I feel like a lot of people in the Labour Party need to accept that there is life outside of their petty infighting. The country is not in the fucking mood for this. And it hasn't been for a very, very long time. Okay? This factional, childish nonsense. Just fucking shut up. And be the opposition that you are supposed to be. You know, I mean, for a very long time, people have been saying other parties in the opposition benches are doing Labour's job for them. And I feel like that is accurate, you know, because Labour, they get wrapped up in this petty, you know, infighting, factional nonsense, you know, momentum versus, I don't know if the right have a cool name or the moderates or whatever, you know, and it's fucking stupid. You know, it shouldn't be the case that the other opposition parties are having to take the lead on things because you're too busy fighting among yourselves. Yes, unpleasant things may be happening in your party. Maybe that's why you should get a proper, you know, fucking complaints procedure that actually works, but don't drag everybody into it. Don't leak people's details. Don't make everything about yourself when there is an actual pandemic happening at the moment. People are dying. People are getting sick. People are losing their homes and their businesses and their jobs. People are frightened. They need an opposition that they can look to so they can say, okay, these people are going to keep the government in check. They're going to make sure nothing bad happens to me. But right now, I don't think anyone can look at the Labour Party and say that. And yes, we have other parties in the opposition. There's the SNP, Plaid Cymru, a very limited number of Greens, the Lib Dems and so on, but they can only do so much. Labour has far more power in the opposition than these other parties do. And they are squandering it by just constantly making a fucking show of themselves. And these are, you know, mainly adults. It's just a mess. And I'm fucking done with it. You know, this is not the time for self-indulgent ridiculousness. People are dying and you guys need to grow up. So a little earlier in the week, there was some kerfuffles in regards to protective equipment. Protective equipment, I feel, is a bit of a sensitive topic right now because obviously it's quite essential to people who work in healthcare and social care. There are teachers still working as well. I would argue they should probably get some. I don't know. But yeah, it's a bit scarce. No one really knows what's going on. Everyone's a bit frightened. It was reported by quite a few media outlets that care homes in Scotland had tried to order protective equipment and had been told, we can't sell it to you. We have been told to prioritise England. Right? Later, the Welsh government came forward and said that they too had providers of care in their country being told the same thing. So, as all sensible governments would do, the Scottish government, the Welsh government asked, what the fuck's this all about then? And Westminster kicked off. At first they were saying, you know, it's not true. It's the SNP trying to play party politics. They seem to be completely ignoring that the Welsh government were asking these questions as well. The Welsh government is of course run by the Labour Party, so how can it just be the SNP playing party politics or whatever when a completely different party is saying the exact same thing and asking the exact same questions? But, you know, they were denying it and saying, no, it's definitely not true. And then journalists were coming forward with receipts and they were saying, well, we have got, you know, we've got screenshots of the supplier websites saying exactly that. We've got interviews where people who work at these companies are telling us that they were told this. What's the tea? And it was really confusing. It was this back and forth thing. The Westminster government kept saying, no, it's not happening. You've just made it up. Fucking ScotNats, God damn it. And the Scottish government, and also, may I add again, the Welsh government, were saying, what the fuck? We've got proof here that this is happening. Why do you keep telling everyone it isn't? Like, and here's the thing. The Westminster government had the opportunity multiple times during the whole day that this kerfuffle unfolded to just say something like, it was a miscommunication. We've spoken to the providers now and we've let them know that it's absolutely fine to supply people in Scotland and Wales. Sorry about the miscommunication. Right? Now, whether that's true or not didn't really matter. They had the opportunity to say that and to reassure the public, you know, protective equipment is not being prioritised for one country in the Union. It was a miscommunication or something like that. Basically, they had time to make up an excuse. And in this environment, if the government fucks up in unprecedented times, I think the public would be a bit more forgiving if they come up with a decent enough excuse. I'm not saying it's the most honest thing, but, you know, if the government at Westminster had said, it was a miscommunication, we're sorry, suppliers, go on supplying whoever you want, I think it would have just blown over. But it was the fact that journalists
kept presenting evidence that this definitely had happened. And care homes had been told, if you're not in England, fuck off, basically. But the Westminster government kept pretending like they weren't seeing anything. And they were like, no, it's not true. It never happened. And it's like, well, there's evidence that it did. And that these companies were under the impression that you were telling them to do this. So why do you keep acting like this never happened? It was so stupid. I don't know who is telling the Westminster government to act like this. There was the whole kerfuffle with Boris in hospital, with them constantly denying things and then getting angry at people starting rumours and, you know, getting angry at journalists for asking questions. And now this, it's like, who is advising you people? What the fuck? It was so stupid. Because they were being presented with evidence over and over and over again. And they just kept saying, oh no, it's just the SNP. They're being mean to us. They're such bastards. Oh, fucking Scottish people. Oh my God. And it's like, but that's not what's happening. We are seeing the evidence right here in front of us. Why are you doing this? But I mean, classic Dom, I guess. I don't know. It was so confusing. It was like, why continue the lie when you've been caught in the lie multiple times? Just cut your losses and make up an excuse. Say it was a mistake or something. Blame an intern, like whatever you have to do. Like, don't sit there telling people things that they have evidence to the contrary of. It's just stupid. Anyway, this is the same government that brought you badges instead of fair wages and Priti Patel in the cabinet despite her being a moron, so I don't know why we're surprised.
The summer nights are long and light. I used to love them, sitting with the sun, but now the never-ending daylight won't let me rest, keeping me awake and aware of how solitary the summer becomes when my heart is a hostage that can never come home again. Maybe one day the sun and I will sit together again, but by then I will be scarred, softly spoken, a new kind of broken with nothing sweet to say.
It's not even summer yet and I'm already predicting it's going to be terrible. I feel like everyone is hyping summer up this year because spring has been quite shit so far. So everyone's like, oh yeah, it's going to be a great summer. We're going to be hanging out at the pub and at the beach and whatever. And it's going to be amazing. Firstly, British summers are not generally like that for more than like 1 or 2 days. So I don't know where you guys are getting these expectations from. And secondly, we don't know if that's going to be possible. So I was thinking about, you know, what happens if summer is a bit shit. Do you know what? July, right? Every July, as you'll know, if you've listened to the show before, that tends to be when I disappear off to the coast for a little while by myself, a little weekend. And I always go to the same place and it really vary, as we all know. And actually, I don't know if I told this story before, but my grandma has this conspiracy, right? She has this conspiracy because I always used to go on holiday by myself to Blackpool, right? Because I love it there. It's beautiful. There's so much fun stuff to do. It's very pretty. The people are very nice. It's a lovely place to go. You know, personally, why would I go anywhere else if I found a place I like going? You know, but anyway, so I'd go there sort of every couple months, just recharge my batteries, you know. I would always go in July. It was a lovely time to go. The sun was out. You can just go and walk on the beach. You can go and watch people dancing in the tower. If you go up to the top of the tower, you can kind of see everything and it's beautiful. And it's such a fun time of the year to go. And it's, if you go early enough in the month, it's not too expensive because it's not school holidays yet. But anyway, so my grandma had this theory that I was going there to meet a secret, like, boyfriend or girlfriend. And every time I came home, she would question me about it, and it was really funny. And then when I started seeing my current boyfriend, she was like, "Oh my God, is that him? Is that him?" And I was like, "No, there was no secret person that I was going to see. I was just going there by myself." You know, if you look at all the pictures and videos I took when I was there, I was by myself in all of them. There was nobody. Why are you obsessed with this conspiracy, woman? Anyway, back to what I was saying. So, I feel like summer's not going to be good this year. And I'm kind of down about it. Because summer I'm into summer. I like summer. It's cool. I mean, yeah, summers in the UK are not always great. Sometimes you only get like a week, maybe 2 weeks if you're lucky, of like proper good weather. And, you know, I used to fucking hate summer holidays as a kid, actually, because I liked the routine of having somewhere to go most of the week and all that kind of stuff. And obviously that's lost in the summer holidays. But as an adult, I find it a lot better, you know, because when you're an adult, you get to make those decisions yourself. So it was just nice and I liked it. Now we don't know if we're going to get it. So I'm just, I guess I was a bit sort of like, fill up your ship, just want you back to summer, I guess. And additionally, we don't know what after is going to be like. We don't know what things are going to be like when this is over. We don't know if the world that we had before is ever going to be something we have again. And it's scary, it's frightening to think about and to imagine what's going to happen. I mean, there are some changes that could be good. For example, really, this whole thing, especially in the UK, has proven that a lot of people can work from home, and therefore there is no need for a commute and an office environment and things like that, which saves the company money because they can save on buying or renting an office space and all the overheads that come with that. And it also saves the workers money because they're not having to pay petrol money or bus fare or train fare or whatever. And it could be better for workers in terms of mental well-being, you know. So that could be a positive change that arises from this, employers making greater efforts to enable people to work from home. But there's also the very scary negative possibilities, such as another recession, families devastated over loss. You know, and that's happening right now. We don't even have to wait for this to be over for that to be happening. That's happening right in front of us. You know, and it's hard to think about. And so I think maybe that's why I and so many other people are holding on to this idea of summer, you know. It hasn't happened yet, but we're living for that thought of it'll all be over by summer. It'll be okay. We'll all go out with our friends and have fun and everything will be perfect and the weather will be great and we'll go down to the beach and we'll, you know, spend time with everyone and we'll have drinks and we'll go out for dinner and we'll go to the theatre and Jennifer will go on her annual trip to Blackpool and have a lovely time. Because if we don't hold on to those things, then we start thinking about what it could really be like, and then it's horrible, really. It's like, I guess, you know, there was that thing that people used to say during the war, it'll all be over by Christmas. Because people had to hold on to that. Because otherwise they started to think about everything that was happening around them, everything that was happening to them, and it was too hard to take. So maybe it will all be over by the summer. Or maybe we're fooling ourselves, but maybe that's what we need to hear. Maybe that's what we need to say to keep going. There has been a lot of social shaming during this whole thing that we're all going through. You know, people yelling at their neighbours for going out too many times, a lot of times without knowing the circumstances. People shaming each other for not coming out to clap at appropriate times for appropriate people. But there's one particular thing, a more subtle kind of shaming, that I want to talk about. And that is shaming the people around you into doing something with this time. There has been a huge amount of social media posts and, you know, kind of like peer pressure, if you will, on people. You know, you have to do something with this. You have to learn a language, you have to make banana bread, you have to clean up your house, decorate, spend time with everybody in your household, obviously. You know, get abs and all this stuff. I just, is now really the time? You know, people can do those things if they want. If you decide that you want to just binge through the entire, you know, Portuguese course on Duolingo, good for you. If you feel like you want to make banana bread for you and your neighbors, I don't, honestly, I'm still not 100% sure what banana bread is, I'm not gonna lie. If you want to do that, great. If you want to start a business during this time, great. If you want to start a homeschool online for you and all your neighbors' kids, fine. But there's a lot of posts that are kind of sort of bragging and also looking down on people that are not doing these things. And I feel like the people making these posts are not understanding that their experience is not going to be the same as everybody else's experience. For some people, getting up, having a shower, getting dressed, and, you know, just reading a book or watching some Netflix or maybe taking a short walk to the shop down the road is what they can do right now. Because for a lot of people, this is very, very hard. And not everyone is going to be able to just snap back, adapt to this new normal. I know everyone hates that phrase, but I couldn't think of another way to phrase it. And get on with doing all of these transformative things. And I don't think it helps anybody to be pushing these expectations onto everyone else. I mean, if you can and you want to do these things, well, that's great. But not everybody's in the same situation as you. I was on Mum's Net. I do not have children. I do not intend to have children. But I am a regular Mum's Net reader because the mums are hilarious. Let me just say that. I spend so much time in the Am I Being Unreasonable section. those girls. They're funny. They give great advice. It's a fun time. And there was a post in there about this exact topic. And they were talking about how there's so much pressure and people putting on this perfect image of their lives and it makes them feel bad. And I get it. And I'm not saying people shouldn't post about what they're doing. If you do happen to be, you know, gaining fluency in Latin or, you know, growing a vegetable garden or, you know, other things like that. If you're doing that, great. Wonderful. Right? But there are ways of talking about this. You can post about what you're doing. That's not a problem. But when it gets to the point where you're acting like everyone that isn't doing exactly what you're doing is lazy or unmotivated or whatever, then it crosses a line and you're just kind of being a dick at a time when people aren't really here for it, you know? And the mum snapped, and frankly, so have I, because it's just like, girl, why are we doing this? Trying to outdo each other, trying to out-quarantine each other, like, this is hard for everybody, you know? And I don't think looking down on other people and how they're managing and looking down on their experience, if they're not doing the kind of things that you feel they should be, I don't feel like that's helpful for anyone. I don't feel like that's a healthy way of dealing with this. If you are endlessly trying to impress other people and to act like you're above other people, then I just, maybe that's what you should be doing with your quarantine time. You should be examining why you feel the need to drag other people down to lift yourself up. Maybe that's, I'm just saying, maybe that could be a fun quarantine activity for you. But I feel like this quarantine has kind of exposed some things about people, you know, whether it's things like that, you know, people kind of aspirationally shaming other people, whether it is, you know, the people who are sitting there at their curtains watching all their neighbours and reporting them on the little police portals and leaving mean notes on the cars of care workers who are going out without a uniform, and you've been reported because you went out and you don't look like a nurse and you shouldn't be leaving the house and all that kind of shit. Well, you know what? Miss Thing, you shouldn't have left the house to put that note on the car. You should have minded your business. It's free and it's easy. You know, whether it's people who are taking this situation to try and act super important online. I've seen that a lot. People who, you know, have kind of turned their social media into like an amateur news situation, and they're like, oh, I have this source who tells me this and tells me that. And then most of the time it turns out to be absolute fucking nonsense. But they just like that feeling of being important and having people pay attention to them. Let's stop that. What is that? I remember a lot of people were doing that. This was a while ago. There was riots in London. I say a couple of years ago. It was probably more than that, but I have no concept of time, as you'll know. And there was a lot of people who were trying to like turn it into, you know, an amateur reporting activity. And they were, you know, talking about all these sources they had and all these reports. And obviously everyone's sharing it on social media because news is scarce and they're frightened. And most of the time, these reports turned out to be absolute nonsense and they weren't true. And it was just someone essentially making it up for attention. And we're seeing that again with this, you know, people trying to act like they're clued in and they have all these secret sources who are telling them things and it turns out to be fucking nonsense. And I mean, that's, I think that's how you end up with the whole 5G conspiracy, you know, and things like that. But just, I don't know, man. This whole thing has just exposed so much. And I don't know how we cover that back up and get on with it, really. I don't think we can. I think we just have to live with it and say, well, maybe some people are quite fucked up, really, and there's not much we can do. We've just got to try and get on with it. But, you know, a couple of weeks ago, again, it could be months, it could be years, no concept of time, the whole of the UK was doing this whole hashtag be kind thing, right? And now we have people putting down others because they're not using their time properly. We have people leaving aggressive, borderline threatening notes to their neighbours. We have people being selfish in terms of, you know, shopping and, you know, things like that. We have people just blatantly making shit up and scaring other people for attention and likes on social media. I know that we latch onto things, you know, ideas like hashtag be kind, hashtag it's okay not to be okay. We have a new hashtag every month in this place, but maybe we could bring that one back. I don't know. Maybe we could. Wouldn't that be cute? It'd be fun. Could have fun with that. Being nice to each other. You know? Not passing judgment on each other. Not arbitrarily reporting and harassing each other. Not lying to each other and misleading each other. And just accepting that we're all in a really, really shit situation. And all we really have is each other. So let's not make this any harder than it has to be. Let's just try. I know it's an old hashtag. Maybe it's out of fashion now. I don't know. But let's maybe try again with this whole be kind thing or whatever we're doing. Why not? Let's, as they used to say, give peace a chance or whatever. Or just give, you know, being nosy and judgmental and a bit dishonest a chance, or give not doing those things. You know what I mean. We're all going through this. It's happening. Let's just try and get through it without descending into absolute fuckery. Disappointed, devoted, I drown my sorrows in dark fruit cider in a dramatic Louis Miguel playlist. In a bed that is so used to my heartbreak that it has learned how best to hold me so I don't entirely fall apart. I can't remember who I was before becoming your plaything, and though I strengthen as I sleep, awake in dreams where I am enough to satisfy myself, I always fall back into the next day, weak and weeping, waiting for you to want me again, held in my heartbreak, comatose and crying myself in and out of sleep, wondering what will become of me if there is nothing more. There is just enough of me left to be disappointed again tomorrow, but who knows after then. I think being locked in, you know, I could leave the house if I wanted, but if I don't have a reasonable excuse, I am liable for a fine, which frankly I do not want to pay. But knowing that I shouldn't be out, you know, and it feels isolated and sad, and I feel like I am definitely creating drama in my head, if you know what I mean. Like, I'm creating problems that don't actually exist, and I'm creating things that make me sad in my head, and then it's just, I'll be like really sad for like the whole day because I've imagined this scenario that I have no actual proof it happened and it has no basis in fact, but I would depress the fuck out of myself thinking about these things and getting sad and being like, God, I'm so abandoned and alone and upset. Oh my God, I'm so lonely and sad and everything is terrible. But it's not real. But because of the kind of person I am, I just have to think something negative and sad and it follows me for the rest of the day. Which, in a way, is good because then I can create things from those created feelings. For example, now I know this makes me sound like a hypocrite because I talked about, you know, not bragging about what you're doing, but, and I'm about to do that sort of, but not in a you have to do this too way, but more it's my job, so I'm obliged to do it. Anyway, I when I started this whole thing, I had a couple of ideas for where I wanted to go in terms of the next record. And now I've got a couple little finishing things I've got to do, but I've pretty much finished it. And, God, at least two of the songs on it are about fictional situations that didn't actually happen, that I just imagined the idea of and got so upset and so hurt, and I ended up writing like these dramatic songs about it. And so, I mean, it's good in the sense that I've, you know, been able to finish some work, and that's great. But now, when I release it and there are going to be certain people who are going to think, oh my God, is that about me? Then I got some explaining to do because, well, no, but it's complicated. Because kind of yes, but this isn't an actual thing that happened. And I don't know how to explain it to you without sounding insane. I mean, how do you tell someone that, you know? Oh, I don't know. I was feeling kind of down one day and then I thought about the idea of, like, you know, if you left or if you upset me greatly, and well, then it kind of became real in my head even though it didn't happen. And well, you know, I set it to a kind of banging 60s beat and now this happened. And but, you know, don't be mad because it's a bop. Like, I don't feel like that's gonna work out for me. But also, they are really good songs, so I can't just like leave them off the record. You know what I mean? You know, so I'm gonna, like, it'll have to come like a primer, like, hey, so you know, any events and things in this musical recording that may seem like real life or like a coincidence or whatever, like, you know, they have at the end of films and shit to protect them from like getting sued. I'm gonna have to put that, but it's not to protect me from being sued, girl. No, it's to protect me from, like, you know, getting into trouble and things emotionally. But yeah, I feel like I have too big of an imagination sometimes, and it not only runs away, but it kidnaps me and takes me to this horrible place. And then can I get out? Maybe, but it takes a while, and it's very challenging. And I've never been able to explain that properly to someone and them get it and understand, you know? So, but at least I've got a couple of months before the, you know, it comes out, and then I can do that. Although it's just occurred to me that, you know, there are other things I've written while in these places that I should also probably explain, but won't. Because, as I said last week, being vague is the only fun but free thing left in this grotesque but glorious world, or something like that. I may be paraphrasing myself there, which is peak narcissism, by the way, and I'm very proud I managed to reach that point. But I'll keep you updated and I'll let you know how it goes. I hope that, you know, I could just be like, I'm a writer, I'm an Aquarius, I don't know. And just hope that that does it for me and gets me off the hook. But we'll see.
Thank you for listening to Sincerely Jennifer with me, Jennifer Wan. If you want to find more of my work, you can on my website, jenniferwan.com. Or you can find me on social media, on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, YouTube, Reddit, SoundCloud, and pretty much every social media website ever, with the username Miss J Squared. Thank you to my amazing top tier Patreon supporters, Amanda, Kylie, Melissa, Anna, Sam, Katie, Christina, Josie, Gabriella, David, Eleanor, Alicia, Emily,